Period Issue for all women.
Hello and welcome to episode 291 of the Standard Issue Podsy. I'm Mickey Noonan and Vinted. Vinted's funny, isn't it? It's funny.
That it is.
Yeah. I put some stuff up for sale because that's what you do on it. You buy and sell stuff. And I put it up for a certain price and someone got in touch with me and offered me half of the asking price. And I said, no, thank you. And then someone got in touch, a different person got in touch and offered me the asking price. And I said, yes, please, you can have this jumper. And then the initial person got back in touch to be like, is this sold? And I said, oh, yeah, it's been sold. And they said, why have you sold it? You knew I was interested.
Did you reply, maybe don't treat this like a car boot sale? Will you take 10p for it?
They have some buttons and ribbons. Please, will you accept them in exchange for
your
jumper?
The best way to register your interest, is it? Like, off, make a preposterously low offer.
Yeah, she needs to show more interest. Yeah, asking price interest, always great, always great.
I find I see a lot of people saying, oh, it's terrible because people completely knock down the asking price. But every time I look and see something I want to buy, the person's basically charging what it costs in the shop. And then I have to pay for postage and I can't return it. I'd just buy it in a shop. Some people are fully deranged about what their clothes are worth.
I guess on that score, it depends on what the item is, whether it's like an item that's been discontinued or was just a limited edition, then people will absolutely make a buck on it. And fair play, we live in a capitalist economy. But yeah, like, say Lucy and Yak Dungarees, which I know are a favourite of yours, they're always going to go for almost as much as you pay for them new.
Why?
I don't know. Just it's a vintage rule of life, a Depop rule of life, an eBay rule of life, all the second-hand places.
I sold a pair of Lucy and Yak in 2.5 minutes on Vinted.
Incredible. See, now that person who bought them showed the right amount of interest. That's how it
exactly
works.
Exactly. Here's something equally as important, more app-based drama. I'm Hannah Dunleavy, and my walking app isn't picking up all of my steps. The horror.
That is frustrating, but at least it's underestimating rather than overestimating.
Mickey and I went for a walk yesterday. Mickey, how far did you walk?
I walked 11,000 steps, which equated to, on my phone, 7.1 kilometres.
What?
Whereas I walked 11,000 steps, which equated on my phone to 3.1 miles.
See, on my phone, that would be over 10 kilometres.
Wow. Let's all just get Jen's phone because it sounds like we're doing loads.
Also, I've got a Samsung watch, which I got free when I got a Samsung phone like 4 years ago or something like that. I would never pay like £500 for this piece of shit. And sometimes after I get off the train from Harwich to London, it's like, you've done 5,000 steps. I'm like, wicked. I've been nowhere. Thanks.
Yeah, I went in a lift in the hotel I was in Porto, that was one of those old lifts that moved so slowly that it registered that I was actually walking upstairs while I was in a lift.
Up a ladder.
Yeah. The difference in that between, what, 3 miles and however
many
kilometres.
It missed a mile, yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I know you walked it, Hannah.
And you know you walked it.
How many steps did my dog do?
Oh, my God. She did a lot of steps. I put her ear in my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And
liked
I watched
it.
Her treat some manure like it was a yummiest treat she'd ever been near.
She ate some horse poo and Hannah very kindly gave her some beef, which obviously she doesn't get that kind of treat in our house because we're veggies. I can't tell you which of them she appreciated more. They were equal status in her mind.
Well, I'm Jen Offord and I went to see something amazing at the theatre last week, which I've already talked about on this podcast. When last week's Sunday Chops went out, which is about Broken Water, and I spoke to the writer Michelle Winstanley and the director Nikki Samer, when it went out, I hadn't actually seen it, but I went last week to the press night and it was fucking incredible. It was so good. Afterwards, I felt a bit shell-shocked, and also it was press night. It was like full of famous actors. It was nuts. There were loads of people there. I was just like, oh my God, it's Mackenzie Crook. Oh, look, it's Helen Lederer. Oh, look, it's that guy that's in absolutely everything, but whose name I don't know. And it was amazing. It was an amazing, amazing play. Well done to them. And listen to The Chops, if you haven't.
Great.
I love when theatre does that, when it blows you away. Coming up, I chat to comedian Jess Foster Q about buses, bulking, her new show Metal, and Jeff Capes. That's right, finally, some Jeff Capes chat on the podcast.
And if someone came up to you and asked you where you were going, would you just tell them?
I don't know.
I talked to journalist and podcast host Catherine Carr about Oh, I've put Catherine twice there. And podcast host Catherine Carr, real name, Catherine Carr, about how many people very much do want to tell her on her podcast, Where Are You Going?
In Jenny Off The Blocks, what next for the women's tour?
And what Generation X stereotype are you? Find out by taking our quiz. I mean, listening to Rated or Dated as we watch 1994's Reality Bites.
But first, Swifties, Shetlands and stars you're working forever. It's time for the Bush Telegraph, Q Sting.
Don't know why I laughed at that.
It's that laugh that turned into sobbing.
Bush Telegraph.
Welcome to the Bush Telegraph, where we're crossing our fingers that the end of political stasis in Northern Ireland means the promised abortion care might actually happen. Crossing our fingers, not holding our breath. More news if it happens.
Well, I mean, for a start, it's quite good that they've got, you know, some politicians again, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, 2 years on and they're back. Stormont is back. Yeah.
Many of you will have heard by now of the brutal chemical attack on a 31-year-old woman and her daughters aged 8 and 3 in Clapham, southwest London last week. Sorry, just to get us off to a really cheery start.
No, but there's no way to kind of intro that. There's no segue, really.
No. The woman and her children remain in hospital where she is thought to have sustained life-changing injuries. Thankfully, her children's injuries are not as serious as initially suspected.
Like the smallest of silver linings in this, right?
Yeah, quite. At the time of recording, Abdul Azidi, an Afghanistan-born man based in Newcastle, was wanted by police in connection with the attack and is the subject of a national manhunt, with a £20,000 reward being offered for his capture. Azidi was, it seems, previously known to his victim. What a surprise. It has also since come to light that Azidi was granted asylum in the UK despite a previous conviction for sex offences committed in the UK and while being listed on the sex offender register. Now, of course, the circumstances around this particular case have provided a great opportunity for certain people. I'm talking about Priti Patel and Suella Braverman, just FYI.
Certain people.
And a few others, I should imagine.
Yeah.
To start blowing the illegal immigrants' dog whistle. But I think it's just worth mentioning that statistics do not support the notion that the majority of acid attacks are carried out by South Asian men as honour crimes. Although these types of attacks are rare, there was a 69% increase in acid attacks in England and Wales in 2022. That's the most recent year for which figures are available compared to 2021. However, the charity Acid Survivors Trust International, or ASTI, which compiled the data, said the figures were likely to be far higher given a number of police forces did not respond to their requests for data.
So,
according to ASTI's website, the UK has the highest number of recorded acid attacks in the world.
I'm really surprised by that. I don't know why I'm surprised by that, but I am really surprised by it.
Well, we're quite a small country, aren't we? I mean,
yeah.
So that is quite surprising.
World beating, Jen.
Historically, these kind of acid attacks have been more commonly perpetrated against men and are linked to so-called gang violence. But in 2022, the number of women victims outstripped male victims for the first time ever.
Again, all horrible statistics and absolutely horrific thing to have happened to someone or for someone to do to another person, but not making it passive. But again, I was surprised because I think the high-profile cases that I've read about
women,
and seen on telly have been women, yeah.
So I would have just assumed it was something that was perpetrated against women, but apparently not until recently. But yeah, like, the mind boggles, doesn't it? Just the cruelty of it. Like, you know, violence against women and girls is nothing fucking new, is it? But like,
no.
the cruelty of that specific type of violence is just, yeah.
It's staggering, yeah.
Really harrowing to think about and utterly terrifying.
You know, it is really scary. And again, all violence I find quite terrifying and it happens way, way too often as we talk about a lot. But there is something particularly, I don't know, visceral, more visceral about this.
It's important to be proportionate that, you know, the number of attacks like this, they're pretty small in comparison to other forms of violence. And they are, as is usually the case with violence against women and girls, they are usually perpetrated by people known to the victim, not just a random guy in the street. But I also think, you know, a lot of people came to the aid of this woman and her children, and a lot of people were actually injured themselves in coming to her aid. And if you have a little Google, there's quite a lot of articles doing the rounds at the moment about what you can actually do to help someone, or indeed yourself, if you witness or are subjected to an attack of this kind, because it's, you know, it's stuff that might not necessarily be that obvious.
No, of course not. Some light reading for after the podcast there, listeners.
Sorry, guy.
It's all right. Like, to be fair, Jen, I'd already depressed myself this morning with my news story, which did genuinely make me go, oh, God. Not least because I had to do some maths. Anyway, before we get to the meat, the sad grey meat. I have to start with the massive caveat that I love my job. I love my job. I am really very lucky to have shaped a work life that, apart from having to do the accounts, is a total joy and a privilege, and has introduced me to a herd of brilliant women doing brilliant things. And yet, still, the news that it looks like I'll have to work until I'm at least 68, probably 71, before I can get my state pension, is the opposite of great news. Particularly given that by 70, only 50% of adults in England and Wales are disability-free and able to work. Which is, of course, part of the problem. A smaller working population and a large economically inactive population reduces that lovely tax base to pay for pensions. Les Mayhew, Associate Head of Global Research at the International Longevity Centre, Professor of Statistics at Bayes Business School, and author of the recent report State Pension Age and Demographic Change, said, in the UK, state pension age would need to be 70 or 71 compared with 66 now to maintain the status quo of the number of workers per state pensioner. But if you bring preventable ill health into the equation, that would have to increase even more. Thanks, Lee. A UK state pension age of 71 isn't on the cards just yet, though. Currently, the UK pension age is 66 and set to rise to 67 between May 2026 and March 2028. From 2044, the year I turn 67, it's expected to rise to 68. Fuck you, maths. Fuck you in the bum. With young generations very much not having the financial assets that their parents and grandparents did, where the money is going to come from remains a massive question in so many aspects of future life. The government, that's our government, has said it will ensure that the state pension remains a sustainable and fair foundation of income for future generations. A spokesperson from that there government said, our £2.5 billion Back to Work plan is supporting people to stay fit and find work, in addition to £14.1 billion to improve health services to help people live longer, healthier lives. And in unrelated news, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, still him, has acknowledged that he has failed to keep his promise to cut healthcare waiting lists. Just thought, just put that one in there as well, Jen. Not that they're connected. Might be a bit connected.
As Shakira very nearly said, the stats don't lie, Rishi.
Stats don't lie. Oh, now I want to watch Shakira, which is one of my favourite things to do to cheer myself up. I had an incredible, you know, on Twitter or X or wherever, when it tells you who you should be following, and it just kept throwing Shakira at me, and I was astounded I wasn't already following her. I am now.
Lovely stuff. I mean, that was great news, Mick, and I'm delighted to hear it. Would you like some more good news?
Please. Is it Shakira-based?
Sadly not. But it is Viking-based, so...
Oh, I'll bring it on,
I'm sure you and all of our listeners will be familiar with the Shetland Viking Festival up Heliar.
I think it needs to be said with a Scottish accent, Jen, but I don't know whether you should.
Well, what I will say from watching Shetland for many seasons now, that accent is actually a bit Norse-sounding, so I'm not even going to attempt it. So let me learn you a bit on this score. It's an annual fire festival which takes place in Lerwick, Shetland, every January and involves processions, marches and the burning of a galley.
I'm going to assume you mean ship, not kitchen there, Jen.
Yep, a little Viking kitchen. It's been around since the 1880s, but up until last week, the main procession was a male-only space. That is to say, Mickey's making a hissing face, that is to say that a 40-year campaign to include women in the procession has finally paid off.
Just need to stick at it, girls. Come on.
So 16-year-old Jenna Moore and three of her cousins became the first women participants.
Well done, them.
Yeah. So what's been the big change following years of resistance, revolt, and a couple of women here and there dressing up as men in an attempt to join the geezer squads?
I don't know. What has been the change, Jen?
Well, apparently it was in 2022 when Andrea Manson became Shetland's provost and Maggie Sanderson became the council's chief executive. Put more women in decision-making positions.
No, because they'll steal our heritage, Jen.
They'll steal our geezers.
I want to be the geezer. More news next week.
Well, you have equal pay, but, you know, they're not equal, are they?
Sexism of the week.
It's that time of the week where maybe I'm being unfair. Let's find out. Taylor Swift, Jen. You know Taylor Swift?
I do, yeah, I do know. Not personally, obviously.
Mega-talented singer-songwriter, uh-huh. Just made pop history at the Grammys,
uh-huh.
Smashing feminist, worth approximately $1.1 billion, and pretty damn easy on the eye. You know, that Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift, right?
Yeah, yeah. So many of her work, yeah.
Well, Jen, I'm afraid I have some bad news about Taylor Swift.
Fuck, what? What's she done?
She's 34. I know, it's appalling that she's let this happen. Even more shocking is that despite being basically dust now, she's managed to snare a man, and rumour has it, they're engaged. I know. Owen Benjamin is pretty disgusted by all of the above, and let me just check his Twitter bio. A comedian slash farmer needed the internet to know his thoughts. I say Twitter, there's no doubt in my mind that Owen Benjamin referred to it as X. The moment must change it and correct people who still call it Twitter. Are you ready for what comedian slash farmer with a blue tick Owen Benjamin had to say about Taylor Swift, Jen?
Oh, as ready as I'll ever be. Go on.
You are not. You're never going to be ready. Right. This is a quote. Why would a rich famous guy marry a 34-year-old woman? If you started immediately, you might be able to have two kids. And she's publicly had sex with a ton of guys.
Publicly? Has she?
Despite her wealth, she's very low quality for any successful male. Just seems weird and almost like he's a gay guy.
Almost, yes.
He carries on, because of course he does. Why would a successful man want a middle-aged woman who's always on tour? Could it be because he's gay?
Probs. Oh, dear.
Now, do we think I'm being unfair centering sexism of the week on this one split condom of a man whose comedy shtick is these sort of takedowns, conspiracy theories and lashings of homophobia? It's sexism, not sexist of the week, Mickey. Or, alternatively, do we think his toxic masculinity is likely echoed by many, many more men? Oh, it's a thinker. It's not a thinker, is it? It's not a thinker at all. A new survey published last week found that Gen Z boys and men are more likely than older baby boomers to believe that feminism has done more harm than good. And a fifth of the men aged between 16 to 29 surveyed by King's College London's Policy Institute and the Global Institute for Women's Leadership look favourably on Andrew Tate. That's Andrew Tate, currently facing charges in Romania of rape and human trafficking, and who has talked about hitting and choking women and has said he is, quote, absolutely a misogynist. What a guy! What guys? Look, it's depressing, if not surprising, news. Want to know something potentially even more depressing, Jen? Why the fuck not? Owen Benjamin has four kids. Sexism of the week ain't going anywhere fast, and sexist of the minute is very much a thing.
But why are you so worried about it? Why are you so worried about Travis, whatever his face is, sexuality?
Taylor Swift's boyfriend. That's the only way I will refer to
him. I don't know how you pronounce his surname, but I think he's Travis someone, isn't he? Yeah, that's a strange link to make.
It's his go-to link. He's renowned as an alt-right conspiracy theorist nutter. I mean, look him up. His timeline is a joy. It's basically the 80s playground kind of, oh, you're gay all of the time. Like, it's an insult when it's not. He's using it as an insult when it's not. It's, you know, he's just, oh, an enormous race of skin. But that tweet made me laugh.
Yeah.
For like a full day.
She's basically dust.
Hello, I'm joined on the Zoom by one of my favourites, comedian, actress, writer, podcasteer, weightlifter and eater, Jess Foster Q.
That's my favourite ever. List of things that you've done there for an introduction. Podcasteer. Like a musketeer.
Yeah, like musketeers.
Yeah, love it. Love it.
Did I see footage of you pulling a bus with your teeth?
No, not with my teeth. with my mainly back and arse, but the illusion of hands. Yeah. Yeah, that was one of the best things I've ever done in my life. That was one of the funnest days of my human life. It was this, like a strong woman competition, and it was the last event. And I'd already really solidified my place in the middle of the pack by that point. But I came second at pulling a bus. And some of the women were mega that day. They were extraordinary. They like it was the first one of those I'd ever done. I've still only ever done three. In an amazing gym in Deptford called Commando Temple, run by an amazing strong woman called Maya Blair. Yeah, what a day.
That's incredible. I love it. You kind of like Jeff Capes, but a lady.
In his latter years, Jeff Capes was often photographed or filmed with a tiny little bird on his shoulder.
Yes. My grandma was obsessed with Jeff Capes and Big Daddy. Fucking
love him. Oh, God. I think the bird was just for his perspective to make his shoulders look bigger, don't you?
Do you think he lost a little bit of bulk and he was like, I know what I'll do.
I know. If I get small creatures nearby, I'll look like a sort of benevolent... Yeah, he's going to look... He's got Snow White energy with a hench of frame.
If anything, this made me respect him more, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Talking of Hench, I rewatched Hench last night because it's available as an Amazon Prime special. A hello, yes, please, Jess Foster Q on demand.
Aww. Thanks.
Two things. One, after we finished, my husband immediately did 40 push-ups. What an effect.
Whoa. Wowee. Never intended to be anybody's fitspiration.
And also, all of it is very thoughtful and very fucking funny. But I was really re-struck on your bit on diet culture and how many brilliant women waste time, energy and potential trying to be smaller because of it. And obviously the patriarchy always there in the background. Me, 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 me. Now, I'm still not quite there yet with my body, but I am getting there. It astonishes me that I now daily and willingly put something called bulk into my body just of my own volition. How are you with your body now? Are you friends with it? Position, did thy heal thyself?
Yeah, I'm a lot further on. That was 2019, 2020, what there was of 2020. And then the irony is I think I'm a lot further on now. You know, I was talking the talk, but I tell you what, I must have come quite far because I got much bigger during the lockdowns. I just wasn't as active or as full of adrenaline as I was before that. And that was okay. It wasn't great. I didn't feel lovely about it, but I didn't panic. And I didn't revert back to the sort of disordered eating I would have done historically in those kind of moments. I thankfully had a brilliant conversation. Can't remember exactly who with, where they just said, yeah, but when the world reopens, you'll go back to your normal level of activity and your body will go back to normal. And I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of things that happen, you know, over the course of a lot, you know, menopause, injury, work, meaning you can't move like you want to move, pregnancy, illness, all sorts of things happen all the time. You don't always get to control your sort of level of your activity and what your body's up to. So I think now I think a lot more about in terms of if I get to do the amount of PE I want to do, that is a privilege. That is a massive privilege. That's an honour. And yeah, I am further on, but I'm not fixed. I don't think I'll ever be someone who looks in the mirror and goes, whoa. I'm still not someone who gets their guts out on Instagram or, you know, never say never, but I'm in awe of people who are like so comfy in their skin that they can do that. And I think it is the future. I think there's some madness. So one thing that happened in the last kind of year that tickled me is I was trying to write a bit of material and the punchline was Bowden Tankini. And so as a conscientious comedian, I thought, I will check if that item exists. Mm. Long story short, 5 minutes later, it turns out there was a sale on and I'd bought a Bowden Tankini. all the while thinking, oh, God, who am I? Who am I? You know, I did not think I was in that bracket yet. And then, you know, I was putting stuff about this on the Instagram and a much younger friend who's in her mid-20s, an Italian woman, like a really beautiful, cool Italian woman, was like, what in the hell is a tankini? And I was like, oh no. I've fallen for Ian in advertising's trick. Of course a young Italian does. They've told us that it's cool and young and sexy by putting Edie on the end. Same thing they did with Paolo Nartini. And now, I thought it wasn't for middle-aged women, it's for cool young Italians. And young Italians have never heard of a tankini. And actually, when you are forced to describe a tankini to someone who's never heard of one, it is depressing.
Yeah, it's got Eni there, but it's also got tank.
Tank is hard as a hard sell, as is, as you said, bulk. They were definitely weren't aiming at... I don't think they were aiming at women when they first invented that supplement brand. Although I also get my bits and bobs from there as well. I think they're great. And also don't mind if someone said, oh, you put on some bulk. I think I could take that in a relatively neutral way these days. Anyway, yeah, when you're forced to say... It's like a bikini, but with the top is long to cover your body you hate. There's sort of no other way of putting it other than that. There's no other way of being like, it's sort of like, covers up the bits you're ashamed of. You're
Oh,
God, it's so bleak. It's so bleak.
Otherwise, you're just blatantly lying. Like, I quite often get quite cold on the beach. And so I like to just have that little bit of extra coverage.
I'm perfectly normal regulating my temperature around my sort of shoulders and neckline and from the knees down. But I do find the belly button does catch a draft. Yeah, right.
A nesh tummy. We've all got a bit of a nesh tummy. It is progress, though. And I do think, you know, what we're fighting against means that any progress is absolutely to be applauded.
Yeah, exactly. It's true. And I would say now, if someone says you look strong or God, you're like, you know, they comment on a body part in any way where what they're trying to do, however... claggily they do it, says you're strong, I think thanks. And I genuinely just think thanks now. And that's gone from being a very conflicted thanks to a very definite and real thanks. I had a lady say, oh, I want thighs like that when I grow up. I had someone say, I had someone call me Quadzilla. And all of those things, I think, you know, 2-3 years ago, maybe more like 4 or 5 years ago, I'd be like, Now I think, oh, thank you.
I also, a little side note, I also spotted that The Silence of the Nans was available to watch. I can't tell you how often I think about you on that cruise ship and laugh. I'm sorry.
Fair enough.
Have you recovered from the trauma yet?
Yeah, I am. I'm over that now. That was a lot.
That was 7 years ago.
But yeah, I'm over that. I say I'm over it. I'm never, ever going on a cruise again for fun or for work, ever. Like, that's just not how I want to go down in every sense.
My in-laws are off on a cruise ship next month, and I do feel sad for the Jess Foster Q on board, whoever that Jess Foster Q is.
Brilliant comedian called Esther Manito did one in more recent years, and she's got a really funny bit in it in her show, which she just extended the tour, actually. I think it's called Hell Hath No Fury, and it's really funny if you want to catch it. But I'm supposed to be plugging mine, but I'm 100% plugging someone else's, and that's fine. She's got a brilliant bit about it in Spoiler, but it basically... They didn't tell her, but it turned out to be a swingers cruise.
Oh, my God.
And it's a really funny bit in her show, so highly recommend.
I think you'd have had a better time if it was swingers, not nanas. Well, what about nana swingers?
Not saying they're not nanas, mate.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Yeah, I've jumped to conclusions that aren't true. So, yeah, since The Silence of the Nans, you've totally become the queen of the one-word title. Hench, wench, metal. Were you not tempted to keep it rhyming?
I was tempted, and I think some people are livid. No, I haven't. But then I just thought, where does it ever end? Do you know what I mean? And actually, like, I think actually having 3 or 4 years of your DMs being pretty full of people going, stench? You know, suggesting ench names. I was like, I don't think I can do... I think there's too long of my career left, hopefully, to weather conversation for that much longer. And also, you know, it might surprise people to know, but, like, you don't... pick a title and then write a show to that theme. You write a show and then you need to give it a title based on what you wanted to write a show about.
Behind the curtain. And also a cat behind your shoulder.
Cat intruder.
Is that the one who talks?
Yeah. Conrad.
Hello?
Just for the listeners, that's the cat, not Jess. It's incredible.
No, that's the noise he makes when he's needs a shit.
Okay, tell us a bit about metal. It's such a great word. Such a great word.
Thank you. I think it's a weird word, and actually, I quite like choosing slightly weird words that might need explaining. Not that I do explain it. I actually only say it once in the whole show. Well, metal is like, it means grit, determination, and it's a show about trying hard. It's a show about. do you know what? You know, you have to write like a press release, or you have to write a summary of your show ages before it's finished.
Yeah.
And I accidentally got it right. Because often I started off writing a show about strength that ended up, I think, being a show about gender. Ugh. With Wench, I started off writing a show about promiscuity that ended up being, I think, far more about privilege and identity transformation. And then in Metal, I started off writing a show about passion and pace and purpose. And I have written the show about passion and pace and purpose. It starts about my perception of my own aging. Like I really feel this really strong sense that it's like accelerated. Like, and I'm in a rush. Like, and I thought actually as I got older, I was allowed to slow down. But if anything, I feel like I'm speeding up. I also thought as I got older, I was meant to give less shits about things. I feel like I care about things more than I'd ever cared about things ever before, with a like real massive urgency. And so it's about those things. And then I'm finding as well, like I've just turned 40, so you always give things a bit of a mega reassess when you have a landmark birthday. Mm-hmm. But I'm finding that I feel very ready in myself and in my comedy to stop analysing who I am and look at what's happening in the world and apply kind of where I'm at to what I'm seeing happening in the world. So that's a bit of a first, really, for me. And long may it continue, hopefully. Annoyingly, I found much harder to write comedy about the things you're really matter in the big wide world that affect lots of people very differently and that people have got very big charged emotions about. But I'm going there in this show for the first time ever. There's bits in it that are going to piss people off, you know, they already have in previews. And that's exhilarating and terrifying going into a tour with bits in it like that. Bits of me are going like, you could have done an hour of jokes in a row if you wanted. And I have. It is all jokes, I should make clear. But I also, it's also a feather ruffler.
Mm. I love it. But I think you've nailed it as well in your description of what you wanted to do, because it's that compression of time as we get older. It absolutely does feel like it's speeding up, because every year is a smaller fraction of what we've done, kind of thing. Or is it a bigger fraction? Smaller. Smaller. Sorry, maths isn't my strong point. The listeners know that. But also, I think the fact that you're willing to ruffle feathers is that idea of we give less fucks about internal stuff and how people feel about us.
Right,
but I absolutely agree with you that I've started to give much more of a shit about what's going on around me.
It's cruel, actually, isn't it? Because we could have got so much more done if we weren't navel-gazing for the first 40 years.
Just staring at that navel through our tankini.
You stretch it, see if you can see through the tankini.
Now, you said about the summary that you wrote, and it did make me laugh because your press release promises that Metal is going to be one of your most personal shows to date. And having seen all of your shows, I'm not sure
how
much
anymore?
More personal you can get, Jess.
Let's be honest, not sure I wrote that line. Yeah, I've shown you inside me. I've basically ripped my heart out through my mouth in every show I've ever done. How could I possibly get any more personal? I'm pretty confident I didn't write that line.
Okay.
Let's just put it out there. There are other people do a draft, lads, is what happened.
Yeah.
That was too honest. And I will continue to be too honest in the comedy as well. It is still a personal show. It's my take on exactly where I'm at in the world. You know, and there's still stuff in there about how absolutely brilliant I am at parenting. There's stuff about lifting, stuff about PE. I think my comedy's always going to be about where I'm at. But for the first time, this is about where I'm at and how that's changing the lens through which I'm looking at where we're all at. And there is something, I think, when you've got any kind of platform, as we are both lucky enough to have, we're using it right now, is you go, well, I need to be using it for something good. Like you're more and more aware of how much time you've got left on the universe. I mean, still hopefully, we're under halfway through, but we also, aware as women, it's not really under halfway through because people will stop listening the older we get. So we need to, on one hand, I want to harness that desire and really go, right, let's go hard, let's work hard, let's be activists in our passions. But equally, I've watched it as well with my, I think I can safely say this, I don't think she's doing this, but I've watched this happen with my parents. And I think that taking it personally thing can potentially be quite unhelpful at times. I think post-retirement for my parents, there can be like an obsession and a sadness over things that my mum took Brexit real hard in a way that I was like, yeah, I agree. Like, we were on the same page politically about it. We both were surprised, devastated, but I found I was able to like detach, analyse, but balanced in a way that she was so emotionally hurt by it.
Right.
That actually, once you get to that point, you're going to then have some work to do to sort of get over effectively what's presented to you as a trauma.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, you can care too much. And I don't want to go so far down that road, that like taking it personally road, because actually it isn't personal. It's the same as road rage. I mean, nothing feels more personal than when someone overtakes you and cuts you up and nearly, you know, smashes into the front of your car or kills himself on their motorbike when they're swerving round you. And your heart rate goes like, doo, 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 doo. And you know, if you got out the car, you'd be close to a physical fight. Like, it's so like, but actually they haven't even seen your face. They don't know who you are. You're never seeing them again. It couldn't be less personal. It's all about them. It's nothing to do with you. And it's the same thing with these harrowing world events. It doesn't mean don't get fired up, but you've got to keep that balance, I think, where you don't let it tip into being like personal. Because I think that's where you potentially lose your motivation to actually do anything about it.
I guess it can make you feel a bit stuck in those emotions. Yeah, totally. Okay, I'm gonna make it a little bit lighter now. Hope that's
sorry,
okay.
Yeah, probably right. Yeah.
I would like to know, Hoovering Jess, what is the most delicious thing you've eaten recently, please?
Oh, gosh. It's bad, but I'm having to pick from lots of delicious things. I'm trying to think. I've had some lovely things. And wonder if it's going to be something. Just before we recorded this, I've been assembling a lasagna that I'm pretty sure is going to be it. But no, the most delicious thing I've eaten recently was, it was in December. I went to a restaurant in Islington. It's tiny and brilliant, and it only does a tasting menu, but it's lipping reasonable, called Black Axe Mangal, and they either have an omnivorous or a vegan version. It blew my mind. I ate things I'd never eaten before. I tried sweetbreads. I had this like incredible, it's called a borscht back, and it's like hot beetroot, but it's like just a shot of it, and it comes with a shot of like really good vodka, and you do the beetroot, do the vodka, and then you have a tiny little chomp of this like spicy little sausage. Oh my god, it was so good. I think about it all the time and I can't wait to go back. It was extraordinary.
Right, when is Sturdy Girls Club back on Radio 4, please? Because I know there's more coming.
There's more coming. I'm researching it right now. Oh my god,
so exciting.
I am having a lot of fun. I'm learning a lot about myself. I just really think there's nothing left to find out. It is recording at the end of April at Up the Creek, where I recorded the first series.
Oh, lovely.
Over 2 days. It's 4 half-hour, 4 different episodes on 4 completely different unladylike sports.
Yes. I don't even know what that means. It could mean anything.
Nor do I or any of the people I've interviewed. So that'll be one of the things we get into, I think.
And will there be tickets for people to come and sit in the audience?
Yeah, there will. Yeah,
okay,
yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
And then I'm afraid I don't yet know when it will go out, but I imagine the turnaround's pretty quick with things like that. So it will be out this year for sure. But yeah, it's free. I think it's just a case of booking in. They're not available yet. I would say in terms of priorities right now, I would mainly love people to come get tickets to see my show Metal on Tour. And also you can now download my last show as a special wench from 800 Pound Gorilla, and it's pay what you want. And if you've got no dosh at all, that is also fine. Around the end of February, it will become available to stream or download for free. So hold your horses, but obviously, if you've got a spare fiver, I'd love it. I'd love to spend that on it. But no, thing number one, come and see Metal. It's touring for the next 6 months.
Well, there you go. Metal is coming to a venue near you sometime between now and June the 21st. And info on the where's and when's, as well as tickets, are available from plosive.co.uk. Jess, you are what I am going to affectionately term a platform slut. You're all over the telly and the podcast. So where can people find you on the socials to keep up with whatever the fuck you're up to?
I am at Jessica Fostercue, and I'm most active on Instagram, I'd say.
An absolute gorgeous pleasure chatting to your lovely face.
Thank you, mate.
All right, Mickey here with an advert for BetterHelp Therapy Online. You all right? Such a small question, and sometimes such a big question too, eh? Now, regular listeners will know I am no stranger to depression, and while over time, and with the help of some decent counselling and brilliant friends and family, I've established a toolkit to help when the constantly dripping tap of life gets a bit too much, that does not mean I am a stress-free human rainbow skipping through meadows. I mean, who is? We all carry around different stresses, big and small, and sometimes we can deal, and sometimes it's much harder to cope. Life, isn't it? Right now, I have a teenage puppy to deal with, and although I love her very, very much, she can be a lot. There, said it. And as quick a fix as it seemed to say, I'm fine, and push it all down into the big inside box and put that lid on. For me, that hasn't been a great long-term solution, in that if I don't get it off my chest, it will at some point come bubbling up, and it's never been one to pick its moments in a good way. I find talking means I can avoid it exploding out of me like a messy emotional volcano all over my nana's carpet. Also, during my various times in talk therapy, I discovered that saying something out loud or writing it down can make it seem much more manageable than allowing it to swirl around and grow ever bigger in my head. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. I've found knowing how to reach out is sometimes the toughest bit, but BetterHelp is entirely online. Boom. Which means it couldn't be easier. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a registered therapist, then work your sessions around your schedule. With more than 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Standard Issue listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/standard. That's betterhelp.com/standard.
Hello, Hannah here. I am joined by Catherine Carr, journalist, radio presenter, podcast presenter.
So nice to be with you and to meet you finally, Hannah. Thank you very much for inviting me to be on.
Oh, you're welcome. I really wanted to talk to you about one of your podcasts, because one that recently came third in the Pod Bible listener's choice, which is Where Are You Going? Which is simply you asking people that question. You have a 4.9%, I noticed, in your reviews on Apple Podcasts, which is pretty rare, Catherine. What do you think it is that speaks to people about such a simple format?
I think it's because it gives people permission to eavesdrop into other people's lives. I think I know I spend a lot of my time looking at people and making up backstories to them, which probably are totally inaccurate. I'm fascinated. And then I really love the idea that I might actually find out what's going on. This idea that I do it for people and they can just eavesdrop on our conversation. I stop people on the street, literally on the way to the shops, on the way to catch a plane, a train, a bus, sometimes on the way to do an operation once, a surgeon in a taxi queue who had a woman waiting on the slab for him, you know. And all of a sudden, this one question, it allows their whole life to kind of unfold. And I think, who doesn't want to know about the lives of the people around them? And it becomes kind of addictive as well. It helps you, not helps you, it sounds all really worthy, but I think it takes us outside of ourselves for a little while as well. You know what's going on in your life and it's very important, but there's something lovely about not being the main character.
How many people do you ask before someone says yes? How do you go about spotting who is a good person? I want to talk about Vox Pops later, but as someone who has done a ton of Vox Pops in my life, I just wondered how you isolate who would be a good person to chat to.
You make me sound a bit like a sniper. How do you isolate? I mean, really, I'll give you an example. I went to Bury St Edmunds recently, which is absolutely beautiful town if you've not been. And it was just before Christmas. Wasn't that busy. It was quite cold. I didn't pick or isolate people. I just spoke to the next person that came along. The first person that came along turned out to be an American whose sister was visiting. His sister has planted a church in Sarajevo, I think, or Slovenia. And this whole story about cultural shock and realising that humanity was the same here and there and reflecting on their lives back in Florida. That was followed up by this guy who's obsessed by the 16th century and was wearing like a knitted hat like Chaucer would have worn. Followed up by these two wonderful women who put on gorgeous festivals in the woods in Suffolk every year. It was just the next... I don't have a system for doing it, because then it would become... It's not random, because it can't be totally random, yeah. But I want it to be as random as possible. So it is really the next person that I can sort of legitimately get to.
And how many of them are keen to chat?
Oh, 98%.
Wow.
You could do this programme outside my front door from now until the end of time.
Yeah.
Or you could do it outside whoever's listening to this front door, whether they live in Walthamstow or whether they live in Barnstable or Leeds. Location sort of really doesn't matter at all. There's beauty and shock and unbelievable stories in quite mundane sounding beginning stories. So you might talk to somebody I did in Bury, let's say, Bury St Edmunds. One of the other people I spoke to that day was a guy who empties the bins in the parks and in the town centre. And it turns out he'd been the son of Jewish refugees. So he was listening to a podcast about the Middle East conflict. That's how we got talking. But the main story he told me was about the love of his life, who was his wife, who developed Alzheimer's really young and who he cared for years. And he gave me this incredibly interesting, beautiful account of what it is to love somebody and to find it incredibly difficult to live with them and to feel grief and relief when they died. You know, that's going right into your heart, which is kind of endless. But that is astonishing. I never would have guessed for a minute that all of that was behind his high-vis jacket.
Yeah. You also spoke to a woman in Belfast recently who was quite open about some medical problems that she'd had. Something occurred to me, and that was what I remembered what it used to be like doing a vox pop, because I hated doing vox pops. In fact, I think most reporters hated doing vox pops. I always used to go to old people and women pushing buggies. And my theory was that nobody had really asked them their opinion on anything for ages. Sometimes people do just want to talk. They just have something on their chest.
I think you're right so much in what you said, which is true. So where are you going, I would say, is not a vox pop.
No, it's absolutely not.
I'm not sort of taking the temperature on anything. Yeah. And also, that's sort of the beauty of it. It uses the idea of a vox pop in the way you're going out and talking to strangers. But often I've done vox pops as well, and you're sent out onto the street. Find out what people think about Gordon Brown's latest budget. And you think, oh, God. And then you've got to ask people to be an expert.
Yeah.
And people are very shy about being an expert about things out in the world. But people are not shy about being an expert about themselves.
Absolutely, yeah.
And plus, where are you going starts with the question, where are you going? Well, everyone knows the answer to this. If you're going to Sainsbury's, it's not very challenging to say you're going to Sainsbury's. Yeah. And before you know it, you've got a conversation. They're not having to say, well, I think the IMF this. But the second thing which you touched on there, I think is one of the reasons why we might have such a high rating on the stars thing, the 4.9, and why we get message after message after message from people. And that's because I think sometimes we don't take the time to stop to find out what's going on with people, and we don't ask. And maybe we've lost a little bit of the ability to listen, which is the big thing that I've learned. Like, listen for the clues. What does someone really want to talk about? You might be going down one path, but it's like Hansel and Gretel. They'll drop a little breadcrumb. They'll have a little throwaway line, say, oh, well, that was just the beginning of it all. And they're trying to tell you what they want to tell you. And I find that fascinating. We got an email from a person who runs a charity who said, thank you for the podcast, because when I suffer compassion fatigue, it's the place I go to remind me about the enormity of other people's lives and what's going on around me. And that sounds really Holy Mary, and I don't mean it to sound like that. But there is something valuable, I think, in constantly getting out of the way and letting other people's lives kind of foreground.
You spoke to two men in Brussels station who I was totally fascinated by, because you initially assumed that they were a couple, and they weren't. But they were ever so cagey about how they knew each other.
I did get a message saying, Brussels, colon, couple, definitely, right? I was like, well.
I mentioned that you had the Podcast Listeners Award. Also, best presenter at the We Are Audio Awards for you, Catherine.
I know. That was an hilarious evening. It was like something from a sitcom, because I knew I'd be nominated, obviously, but it's, for all its success, Where Are You Going is not a celebrity-fronted, lots of money put into it exercise. So you sort of have a sense of humility with that. You're like, okay, we're up against, quote-unquote, the big boys and girls. And I walked into the auditorium, and a friend of mine who produced a show which basically scooped every award in every category in award season, if you want to call it that, was sitting on the end of a row. And I said, oh, blimey, have they told you you're going to win? Is that why you're sitting on the end of the row? Because no one told me to sit on the So I was really grumpy, and I kind of shuffled. The only place left was right in the middle at the back of the auditorium. So I sat down with a couple of mates. It's really fun when you go to these things because, you know people who make things and you're proud of them and you want them to win. So we're sort of clapping away for all the people that we want to win and whooping. And then it came to our category, and they said, you know, bronze goes to silver goes to... And my friend and I turned to each other in total unison and said, never mind. Yeah. And then they said, oh, gold goes to... And it was my name. And I was like, oh, my God, that's amazing. And then in the same moment, I thought, oh, sugar, I'm right at the back, right in the middle of a row. So they were kind of doing the, like, do-do-do-do. And then... Do, 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 do. And I was meanwhile, sorry, I'm so sorry, excuse me, I'm really sorry, could you move your foot? So no, I didn't expect to win, and it was an interesting evening because it was just when the war in the Middle East had started, and there were some people using the opportunity, fairly and rightly, to talk about the situation in Israel and Palestine, feeling a bit conflicted, sort of saying, I wonder if all this pizzazz and fizzy wine event matters when this is going on in the world. And I thought, I then had to make a speech, and because I hadn't expected to win, I hadn't prepared a single thing to say. A short speech, but a speech. So as I was like making my way along that row, I thought, no, I disagree with you. Obviously, you know, two things can be true. Like, you can give money to help with a situation that's going on, and you can celebrate beautiful radio that's made.
Yeah.
But more than that, our podcast and a lot of other podcasts that exist and radio programs, they tell stories. And they tell stories to help us understand other people's realities, even other people's realities we might struggle to have compassion for or believe in or understand, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the only tool we've got. So I sort of said something like that, which probably sounded a bit showy-offy or whatever, but I actually believe it.
I agree.
Are really powerful. And with our podcast, we're not going to people whose stories we already know. They've been researched. They've been in the media already. They've been on this show and that show. They're just somebody walking past. And before you know it, wham, you have a little bit more insight into the way that the world works because you know their story.
Can we talk briefly before you go, Catherine, about Relatively, which is your other podcast, which is about siblings, which is a very, very fascinating topic.
It is a fascinating topic. I take it you've got a sibling.
I have two siblings. I have a brother and a sister. Yeah.
Are you middle baby or oldest?
I'm the middle one. Yeah. The best one.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Or the fucked up one, depending on how you look at it.
Well, my podcast did say Catherine started this podcast to finally get some attention. So.
Exactly that.
I'm hoping to write a book about siblings, actually, based on it. It came about during the start of the pandemic. It's not nice to talk about that, but there was an element of people reaching out to their grown-up siblings, like their pack, and just making sure everyone was okay in this weird dystopian nightmare we suddenly found ourselves living in. And I was talking to Jane Garvey, actually, who used to present Women's Hour, and now, of course, is on Times Radio. And I was saying, oh, I don't know, I should just make a podcast about my prison officer sister and my vicar's wife sister. It's such a drama. And she said, no, but you should make a podcast about siblings. And I thought, do you know what? And then she said this line, which is the sort of strap line for our podcast. She said, you know, it could be the longest relationship of your whole life. I was like, thunderbolt moment. I was like, why has no one ever explained that to me before, that you could have a relationship with your sister for 97 years or something? That's unbelievable. Yeah. And so I started sort of talking to celebrities. The idea is you get a celebrity-ish or a well-known person and a sibling, and I interview them separately and then together. And what's beautiful about that is you can ask Catelyn Moran, you could ask her sister, what's Catelyn really like, or how would you describe her character? And you get these beautiful, intimate answers, which then you can ask the other sibling, oh, your sister said that she's always felt quite protective of you and she worries about you. And then you get their response. It punctures the kind of celebrity narrative because you also get siblings being like, don't be an idiot. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
It's about stories. Again, two siblings telling the same story from different perspectives is totally fascinating. And it's hilarious. Jess Phillips and her brother told this story that still makes me weep with laughter. That they got shut in their bedroom, was the 80s. They got locked in their bedroom for being naughty or like grounded to their bedroom or something. And so to quote unquote cheer their dad up, it was near Christmas time, they used a family sized bottle of talcum powder to create a winter wonderland in their bedroom, which they thought would really cheer him up. You know, so it's got that. It's got nostalgia. And then it's got, you know, truth, people opening up about family life and their relationship. And a lot of times siblings, when I asked them to talk, they hadn't thought about it, just like I hadn't when I started. They were like, oh, I never thought about our relationship quite like that. And so to hear those realizations on tape in real time, fascinating. I absolutely love that book.
Recently, a couple of people that I know who are only children have had some big life issues coming up, and I found it really interesting to observe them doing it alone, you know, without... Yeah. I mean, obviously, they're not alone. It really made me realise the value of having somebody who basically has lost exactly the same thing that you've lost, or is worried about losing exactly the same thing that you're losing. Because my brother is 10 years younger than me, so he doesn't always get the thing, because he wasn't always there. There are things that my sister and I talk about that he just doesn't know about, even relatives that he never met. So I have my sister for that.
Completely. And I think that's the paradox that I've just been writing about, actually. So Jill and Nick Hornby, both authors, Nick Hornby, you'll know, and they came on. They had a very interesting story. You'll have to listen to their episode. And they sort of said, you know, we're the keepers of each other's histories.
Yeah.
Who else? Who else could understand? And yet the paradox is, just like you said with your brother, it's like a flowing river, the family, if you think about it. And each baby is born and the river moves on and the next one is born. And things have changed in between that time. Yeah. Like the family dog's died, or you've moved house, your dad's been made redundant or got a promotion, the grandma's died.
Yeah.
It's not quite the same. And you mess up the birth order because you make the youngest the middle or the oldest. So it's all very sort of, yes, we all share this thing. And it's so comforting as I get older towards middle age. My sisters, I couldn't do this stage of life without them, I don't think. But at the same time, they were the main character in their story of their childhood. And I have to bow down to that sometimes and say, tell me how it was for you. Oh, that's weird. I don't remember that. So it's a really, really interesting topic. I'm hoping the book gets bought and I get to do lots more research into it, basically.
Oh, me too. Yeah, and come back and talk to us when you've learned some more. Because, I mean, in candor, I haven't always got on with both of them, especially my sister, because we had to share a bedroom. So, we were on top of each other, basically, the whole time. And we didn't have a huge amount in common. You know, we didn't really like the same stuff. In fact, people used to say to us, when you've both got kids, that's when you'll really get on well. Interestingly, neither of us had kids, but we do get on well now.
Yeah, there's lots of research about this I could bore you with, but I do think there is a kind of, there's a midlife thing where you reach back to old friends, even if you don't have siblings, or people who knew you before everything got messy. It's a very common thing to do. And so actually getting better relationships with your siblings can be one of the things that happens in midlife, because you just want someone who can return you to yourself sometimes. Mm. The other thing I would say is there's some really interesting sort of nerdy DNA facts, which is just the way that DNA is shared down the generations. You can share the similar amount of DNA with your sibling as you do with a cousin or with a twin. So actually, when people say, you know, your brothers and sisters, you must have all this genetic makeup in common that means you're probably going to get on. Actually, you can be quite DNA remote from your sibling.
Really?
Yes. Or you can be really, really sort of similar in DNA terms. So that to me, I was like, well, oh gosh, that's great. That takes some of the responsibility off us. Get on with your brother or whatever. And off the parents. If your kids don't get on, it's painful. But maybe there's lots of actual scientific reasons why they're different people. Really different people.
Catherine, this has been excellent. I'm really interesting.
Thank you so much.
I absolutely advise that people go and listen to one or both, indeed, of your podcasts.
Oh, thank you, Hannah.
You play ball like a girl!
Go on, do one, kid. Jenny off the blocks.
Welcome to Jenny off the blocks, that time of the week where we sprint past the patriarchy to the finish line as we discuss all things women's sport. First up, a big congratulations to Team GB, who cleaned up at the UCI Track Nations Cup in Adelaide last weekend. Lauren Bell, Sophie Capewell and Emma Finucane beat China to go one up on their world championship result and bag a gold in the team sprint. And in the team pursuit, Katie Archibald, Eleanor Barker, Josie Knight and Anna Morris took home the silver. Meanwhile, Jessica Roberts won a bronze in the women's elimination race, and that was just on the opening day. Archibald and Barker went on to further success with a gold in the women's Madison, and there was another silver for Archibald in the Omnium. And on the final day, Katie Marchant also took home a silver in the Keirin. It is nice to go into an Olympic year looking so strong, so we'll be waiting with breath that is bated to see how they fare in the next two rounds in Hong Kong in March and Canada in April. Now, in less positive news for British cycling, you may remember that the women's tour was last year cancelled after its organisers, Sweet Spot, were unable to attract enough investment to hold the event. nor were they able to crowdfund it. The company, which owed huge amounts of money, was liquidated back in January, leaving something of a dilemma regarding the women's tour. The good news is that British Cycling have now taken responsibility for holding the race, hoping, they say, to build momentum and credibility. But the bad news is that the governing body says it faces a race against time to save the event, and that there could be, and I quote, duration compromises, according to the chief exec, John Dutton. Now, I think that is a curiously fancy way of saying that the event might be shortened in order to allow it to go ahead at all. He added that he didn't think there would be six stages in this edition and that the organisers were instead focusing on quality rather than quantity. OK, I think, as ever, let's not make perfect the enemy of good, but let's also not be grateful for the scraps, yeah? I mean, I note that it's not suggested that the men's tour should be shortened from its traditional eight stages to in any way accommodate or facilitate a longer women's tour. Yes, the men's tour is more commercially successful, it's more popular, etc. My counter to that would be that the women's tour can't be commercially successful if it doesn't exist. This is part of a bigger problem in the UK, and the men's races are also at risk. You know, let's not shy away from that. The Tour de Yorkshire, which began after the county hosted the Tour de France's Grand Depart back in 2014, that doesn't exist anymore. Costs associated with these events, in particular of policing them, are extremely high. But I think what really stings about this one is that women's cycling was such a huge success story after the 2012 Olympics. There were massive numbers of women taking up the sport, and we have such a breadth of talent in this country. This was also an event, this one in particular, where the prize money was equal across the men's and women's events, which is rare, as you know. Maybe there's something in that. Don't run before you can walk, or indeed, you know, take your stabilisers off too early. Maybe this is a lesson that women's football can teach us when it comes to sustainability. But I also think, you know, we can't wait for the world to catch up. Sometimes you've just got to get shit done. I don't have the answers, but I hope that the event will go ahead. Hope it will be successful. And maybe a bit of success at the Olympics this year could help fuel another kind of burst of activity. We shall see. That's all for me this week, and I'll be back next time with more women's sport.
Welcome to Rated or Dated. Hannah, what film that we watched this week once more raises the question, can Ethan Hawke actually grow facial hair?
This week we watched 1994's Reality Bites, Ben Stiller's directorial debut, which was written by Helen Childress based on her own experiences as a young adult and those of her friends. It made $41 million at the box office and is regarded by most as a cult film, although I think this might be the first time any film described as having cult status hasn't previously been watched by any of us, or indeed any of the friends I asked this week, all of whom are Generation X's. I tell you who did see it. A film financier called Troy Dyer, which is the name of Ethan Hawke's character in the film. Dyer sued Childress, Stiller and producer Danny DeVito after Childress stated on audio commentary tracks that she wrote the story based on her actual college friends and roommates, and that he was then forced to deal with past and potential clients' inquiries as to whether he was the fictional character. The suit was settled after Dyer received a written document from Childress stating that he was not the person portrayed in the film. And I think that might give you an indication of what Troy Dyer, the character, is like, that people actually went to court to prove that it wasn't them.
What, the hero of our story, Hannah?
Let's have a little trot through the plot. Lelena, fucking hell, why have they always got stupid names? Lelena, played by Winona Ryder, is a 23-year-old former valedictorian who's working as a production assistant for a horrible TV presenter, played with gusto by the wonderful John Mahoney.
My heart.
She dreams of becoming a documentarian, and the film is framed around a film she's making about her friends and the hardship of being a young person nowadays.
Hannah missed out the word terrible, didn't she, when she was describing that?
She lives in a flat with her friend Vicky, played by friend of the show Janine Garofalo, who is working in Gap and sleeping with half of Houston, leading her to worry that she may have contracted AIDS. Vicky invites Troy, a feckless Ethan Hawke type, played by Ethan Hawke, to sleep on the sofa after he loses yet another job for being a feckless Ethan Hawke type. He brings his guitar. Shudders.
Oh, get out.
God.
Lelena and Troy want to fuck, which they demonstrate by arguing constantly. Also in the mix is Sammy, a gay man struggling to come out to his parents, played by Steve Zahn. Sammy and Vicky are the most interesting characters and inexplicably get the least screen time.
Agreed.
The will they, won't they, Lelena and Troy dynamic is complicated when she, in genuinely one of the most poorly contrived and executed plot developments I've ever seen in a film, has a car crash with TV exec Michael Greats, yes he does, played by Ben Stiller. Will our heroine pick Troy or Michael? Will Vicky be punished for her lifestyle? Will anyone remember Steve Zahn is in this film? Will anyone club Troy to death with his own guitar? Let's find out. So, I have a question for you lads, and it's one a few people seem to have had a go at answering. What is this film? Empire called it a sweet rom-com. The New York Times thought it was satirical, and Roger Ebert seemed to find it all quite cynical, saying the film showed that, quote, anyone who shoots documentary video footage of friends is a genius. Anyone who is pushing 30 and has a good job has sold out. And anyone who is simultaneously unemployed and hostile is a reservoir of truth. Don't always agree with him, but I feel like he's hit onto something there.
I feel
there.
Like Ebert has like nailed my thoughts there, for sure.
Mickey, Jen, have a go at the question. What is this film?
This isn't really an answer, Hannah, but it's more of a reflection. What are the people who aren't millennials, who are even younger than millennials?
That's us, Gen X.
What are they?
No, even younger, that's Gen Z.
Oh, Gen Z, Gen Z.
Right. So if a bunch of Gen Zers made that documentary, can you imagine how much we'd be laughing and saying what self-indulgent little twats they were?
Yeah.
That's it. That's all I've got to say.
I think Jen just helped me with the answer to your question. What is this film? What is this film?
Is it self-indulgent twats?
Unnecessary, but also... Yeah. A pseudo-documentary about some self-indulgent little twats.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And I agree with what you said, Jed. It's like the equivalent of the Labby Sithri song, I Don't Know What's Happened to the Kids Today, in that song was written in the 70s. I mean, Christ knows what he'd make of the kids today, yeah. If you know what I mean. It shows that the dynamic never changes. People always moan about younger people, and younger people always moan about older people. It's just the technology around it has changed.
This film is confusing as well, because they're all arseholes. And I will, obviously, even Michael fits into that a little bit, Ben Stiller's character, Michael Greats. But he is the best of the bunch, and he's supposed to be the one we hate most. But they're all entitled little pricks. She's valedictorian. She loses the last page of her speech. Can't even think of anything interesting to say. She's rubbish. This film that she's making is shit. It's so... bad. It's terrible. The sound bites are so cringy. Is that how Steve Zahn Sammy wants to come out to his mum and dad? I don't think so. I don't think he wants them to see it on Mad Face 24 or whatever the channel is called.
But that said, that is what Winona Ryder did. That was kind of her shtick.
She's so one note, isn't she?
Ethan Hawke's quite one note too.
Yeah, but I was just like, this is exactly the same as, say, another Winona Ryder film, which I love, which I keep thinking, I wonder when that's going to come round. And also, I wonder how much I would love it if I watched it now. But Mermaids, right, she plays that character exactly the same as she plays the girl in Mermaids. She's like... She's just so the same. And I was just like, oh, God, fuck off.
She is a really interesting character because...
Is she?
Winona Ryder or Lelena?
I mean Winona Ryder.
Oh, right, okay, I'll take that.
Because she is one of those people that makes me wonder, did I imbibe a media narrative about her? Because obviously there was the shoplifting incident, but also there was like the Johnny Depp stuff and the Ryan Adams like wrote that one of his albums is dedicated to her and it says to Winona, you damn woman, or something like that. Yeah, there was very much a narrative that she was. But interestingly... Stiller apparently sacked Janine Garofalo and Winona Ryder got her back.
Yeah,
so she obviously had power.
I guess she was a bit like Johnny Depp in this respect, in that he actively pursued roles that did not just cast him as like the pretty guy. He sort of actively like went out of his way to not be typecast. And I feel like she kind of has done the same thing as well, because a lot of her roles around this time were a lot more like indie stuff,
yeah,
than kind of mainstream stuff. But she was super, super famous at the time. She would have been like, I guess, one of the most in demand actresses of her generation. You know, she was a massive star until the shoplifting thing, wasn't she? And then she sort of went away.
I think her roles can be best described as not like the other girls.
Kooky.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
But deliberately quirky. And starting off with Beetlejuice, which is a film that I still really like, and I like her in it, but it feels like she's just stayed at that level.
Yeah.
And it's just insufferable, just the entitlement. Oh, we don't want to work 80 hours and buy a BMW. I thought, okay.
She's so horrible when she says she won't work in Gap.
Yeah.
And that when her friend actually offers her a job and she won't work
so
in Gap.
So snobbish.
I mean, she is really, really snobbish there. And she just basically pushes off the debt onto her dad. She's like, hey, I'll just live off my dad's credit card.
She steals off her dad is what she
does.
Yeah,
that's true.
And she runs up those phone bills and you're just like, you are just a fucking nightmare flatmate. Like, you're awful. This would be horrendous. When she says that to Vicky, and Vicky's, you know, understandably quite offended, and she's just like, oh, what's your problem? It's like, really? Really?
Yeah. No self-awareness at all. And what I will say is, again, because he is supposed to be the villain, I think we are very much supposed to relate to Ethan Hawke, Winona Ryder, Janine Garofalo, Steve Zahn. But Ben Stiller's character, again, he's not very three-dimensional in any way. But when he realises it's fucked up, the reason I hate him so much is because he thinks she's got talent, and that's just ridiculous. But when he's like, she's very upset with what they've done to her film, he goes and sorts out a meeting for her to come and talk and have her film made the way she wants it, and she fucks him off.
I don't understand how he's a villain. Is he meant to be a villain?
I think we're supposed to be rooting for Troy, aren't we? Like,
he's
they're shipping Troy, yeah, and he's the capitalist man, yeah. He's sold out. He's a yuppie, which is the worst thing you can be,
just
apparently.
Just a nice bloke.
He just seems like a nice guy.
Just a nice bloke with a good job. Like, what's wrong with that?
Well, he wears a suit, Jen. How dare he?
But Troy's an absolute bellend.
He just nags her all the time. He's horrible to her. It's almost like Richard Curtis wrote this love story.
One of the critics at the New York Times pointed out something which was quite interesting. He said that it was both trying to be counterculture, but actually like pushing loads of buttons that Hollywood like goes for.
Ooh.
Do you know what I mean? So it's both very commercial itself and trying to be counterculture. And actually what really struck me is that there's a U2 song on the soundtrack. That is like the least counterculture I think anyone has ever been. And yet there it is.
Agreed. And also there's like a lot of product placement with the big slurp or whatever it's called. Clearly didn't go in, but I'm not American. They have a full-on conversation about how great this product is while holding them close to the camera.
Yeah. It is interesting that this is undoubtedly a cult film. But yeah, it doesn't appear to be over here. I wonder if it speaks to something that's specifically American and just didn't speak to British audiences. Perhaps
it's
that's
definitely
why it is.
A cult film and not just a cunt film. Have you not misheard?
Because I don't really understand that, because it's not like, as you said before, Hannah, like, the older generation will always think the younger generation are twats, right?
Yeah.
And it's not like, I understand that was a specific point in time, there was stuff going on then, like the HIV stuff, for example, would have been like a bit of a hangover from the 80s, the recession at the time and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, no, I mean, AIDS was still a big deal in the early 90s, Jen.
Okay, sorry, our resident AIDS expert, Hannah Dunleavy, correct me, of course. So I understand there were a few specific points in this that won't necessarily be relevant forever, but like most of that shit is timeless in a way, in that like young people don't have a lot of money and they have to make some decisions about their life, and sometimes those decisions are a bit hard, and sometimes you might, especially if you're someone involved in creative pursuits, you might have to decide like, am I gonna go and do some corporate dog shit for a bit to pay my rent or whatever. So those kind of themes, they're quite universal in a lot of ways. A lot of people have those problems, so why they are such unsympathetic characters to me is kind of like a bit of a mystery, because I feel very much like that's not really any different to how my life was in my 20s. And I'm sure, well, apart from like my dad giving me a BMW and that side of things. But I feel like those issues would have been relevant to me. And yet I feel absolutely fuck all sympathy for any of them because they're all twats.
I think that's interesting in the question of has it dated? Because I think, I mean, it undoubtedly has dated because that, there's a line in it where John Mahoney says to her something like, I could just sack you and get an intern to do it for free. And that actually is what happens now.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The idea that anyone would have been paid to be doing her job. So actually, I think that a young person watching it now would get nothing from this other than, what the fuck were you moaning about? Life looked brilliant.
Yeah. Undoubtedly, people in their 20s now are considerably worse off than people in their 20s, you know, 30 years ago. So, yeah, absolutely. But in some respects, I think people in their 20s now, maybe they could... maybe if you're 20, maybe that's the point. If you're 20, you can overlook the fact that these people are twats because you're a twat as well, because hopefully age makes you less of a twat. I don't know. Doesn't always work that way.
Equally, what she's doing is what all young people are doing now, which is documenting their lives because they think they're
putting
really interesting.
Content out there.
She'd just be on TikTok now, wouldn't she?
Well, that is interesting, isn't it? Because when you're watching, as you said before, is that how Steve Zahn wants to come out to his parents? Like, when you're watching this like awful thing that's been put together, you're thinking like, oh man, are you really putting that in the public domain? That's excruciating.
Yeah, yeah. It's humiliating.
That's awful. Yeah. But then that's exactly what people are doing all the time now, as you say, Hannah. So it's kind of like, it's quite relevant. They're just awful.
Yeah. I just want to make one point, which is apparently the title is misunderstood quite commonly. And I think maybe that kind of sums up for how maybe I am just misunderstanding this film. Perhaps I should have watched it at the time. But she said that, like, the word sound bites had become quite... It must, in the early 90s, had been started to be used a lot in conversation. And she, Childress, she had this idea that reality bites were, like, short chunks of reality. As opposed to what everybody read it as, which was...
Like,
reality
bites. Sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, surely it could have been a clever double play.
Quite.
Because when it does get made for in-your-face TV, they do it more as like snapshots, like sound bites, but for telly, like, and they call it reality bites. That's where the title is in the film, is the title of the in-your-face docu-shorts that fuck up what she thinks is her masterpiece. And actually, I feel is better than anything she's filmed. I feel like they make it better. I think they could have done something with it. It feels like there could have been, with everything you and Jen have discussed about the touch points it covers, AIDS, the recession, the transition between being a kid and having to go out into the real world. It feels like it could have been an interesting film and they've just booked it by focusing on a romance and sidelining the characters who are interesting and are actually dealing with bigger problems than Troy and Lena.
Yeah.
That is a very good point because... You're absolutely right. They turn it into like the main plot is this romance between these two totally unlikable people
who should not be together.
So I don't care if you get together. It's of no
interest.
Actually,
maybe they should be together because it saves two other people from having to be in a relationship with either of them.
Oh yeah, why make four people?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. True.
I'm going to end with the question I promised: which Generation X character are you? Did any of them speak to you?
I mean, this isn't how I wanted to come out to my parents, but no, scratch. No, I don't think so, no.
No, I mean, I suppose I could see bits of... I never got sacked for stealing a Snickers.
I made terrible decisions relationship-wise, I guess, but that went well into my 30s, so I don't know that it's just about being 20.
Still making it.
I squandered a lot of young promise, smoked a lot of weed and slept with a lot of people. So I think there was a bit of me in all of them, if I'm honest.
I was going to say, how are you with growing facial hair? You might be the new Ethan Hawke.
Oh, my God. Way better than my gender, gender should allow, if I'm honest. Rated or dated?
Dated.
I mean, I don't think it's that dated because I think for the reasons that I've said, I think a lot of that stuff is still very relevant, but I think it's shit.
Okay, so one dated, one not rated. And I agree with Mickey. I think it's dated. What are we watching next week?
Well, lads, we're stepping back further in time to 1984 next week.
Oh, is it going to be Footloose?
We're watching Footloose.
I so nearly picked it myself.
6 degrees of separation questions heading your way.
Sex.
Standard issue for all women.